Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur, and welcome. Welcome to the show, welcome back to the show, depending on if you have or have not been here before. It is the first week of April, 2020. Things are still pretty weird out there. Yeah, day to day, it's, you know how it is. It's strange right now. But one thing that is bringing me some joy and some excitement and some distraction from everything else is getting to do these interviews and getting to do these episodes for you. So I hope they do the same for you. And I hope that you enjoy them, even if it's in a new sort of way than you used to. So without further ado, let's get into today's episode. My guest today has been practicing learning and teaching the art and process of increasing sales and improving customer experience with simple personal videos. He's been doing this for more than a decade, and he's personally sent more than 10,000 videos himself. He started a career in local television marketing, and then he joined BombBomb. It's a software company that helps professionals get face-to-face through video for clearer communication. He spent the past 9 years there. He grew into the VP of marketing position before his new role as chief evangelist. In 2019, he co-wrote a book called Humanize Your Business, the definitive guide to using simple personal videos and emails, texts, and social messaging for clearer communication, human connection, and higher conversion. Now, let's hack. Ethan Butte. Now, just before we get into today's show, I want to just tell you about our awesome sponsor, FreshBooks. Tens of millions of Americans and Canadians at this point want to work for themselves. They want to become freelancers or start their own businesses. Sadly, 35% of those people cite inconsistent income as one of the biggest things holding them back from starting. If money's a big deterrent, would getting paid twice as fast help you make the leap? FreshBooks can help you. It's cloud accounting software that basically does your invoicing for you. And on top of that, it gets you paid twice as fast. And yes, it's absolutely simple to use. It's made for entrepreneurs and freelancers like you and me. FreshBooks lets you create and send invoices automatically. You can accept credit cards and ACH payments right on invoices. And you can automate payments for recurring invoices. Plus, automate your invoice payment reminders so you don't have to constantly be emailing your clients to pay you. Overall, FreshBooks helps you face big challenges like getting paid so you can focus on growing your business. Right now, I'm giving listeners a free 30-day trial to FreshBooks right now, no credit card required. Go to freshbooks.com/hack and enter Hack the Entrepreneur in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Once again, 30 days free with FreshBooks at freshbooks.com/hack. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very special guest. Ethan, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, John. Really appreciate the opportunity and looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. I'm glad we got connected the way we did, and I'm looking forward to this. So let's just jump into it. Ethan, can you tell me, what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
This is going to, generically speaking, I'd say curiosity. It's just the kind of thing that keeps you moving forward in an open way. Almost anything that we do personally and professionally is essentially an iterative process. You get after it a little bit, you learn a little bit, you do some things differently, you stop doing some other things, you double down on the things that are going well. And it's been that way throughout my professional life as well as my personal life. And so I think allowing curiosity to guide you, and then just my other highest value is honesty, being honest with yourself and honest with other people, avoids a lot of wasted time and energy.
Yes. So curiosity and honesty. Curiosity seems to be one that ties in. It seems to tie in oftentimes with like marketers and stuff. That's where like the, I think you need to be curious in that sense to, I think, to really sort of dive in deep into like your customer and how you can help them. But is this something, Ethan, like that you were sort of innately born with, or is this something you had to develop over time?
Well, I think it's just part of general self-awareness. I think you come to learn the honesty one is deep. Obviously, you hope that that's modeled for you throughout your life and that it just becomes kind of a default position. But I think honoring the curiosity and allowing yourself to spend some time and energy where you don't know that there's an immediate ROI. I mean, I think a lot of us will construct our to-do lists for the day and for the week and get some delight in crossing them all off. But, you know, these are all prescribed activities that, you know, you may need a little bit of flexibility around it. And some of the things that land on my to-do list are just things that are driven by curiosity. I've developed enough trust within the team at the company I work with that I'm allowed to pursue some of these things because they know that I'm doing it with the business best interests in mind and that kind of a thing. But it's hard for some personality types in particular to allow themselves to pursue things where you don't know exactly what the outcome's going to be. And I guess I would kind of chalk that up a little bit in the curiosity for provocation a little bit. I'd chalk that up in that column.
That makes sense because otherwise it's very analytical on a spreadsheet. Like you're putting in this input, it should, like, what's the multiple going to come out on the other side? And it's not always like that. And I like this idea of like spending time where there isn't necessarily a defined ROI. Can you give us an example?
Sure. I mean, we did a pretty deep dive customer study toward the end of last year. We wanted to know, okay, what are some of the things that are contributing to customers who stay with us a long time? So I work at a software company called BombBomb. We make it easy to record and send videos. It's a subscription-based service. We've got about 50,000 customers all over the world, but primarily US and Canada, in a variety of roles and industries. And so for people that sign on with us and then leave after 6 months or leave after their first year renewal, you know, what's different about them than people who are now on their third year renewal? And so we definitely took the data and gave it to our business intelligence team, and they ran some linear regressions and some other things that I'm not particularly adept at or interested in. But I have all of this data, and we did some initial conclusions, and we shared those as a leadership team middle of first quarter or so. But I still have all of this rich data, including a bunch of verbatim feedback. And so I'll just time block on my calendar an hour now and then. In fact, I just did it yesterday, which is why it's top of mind for me here in this conversation, to just, you know, I call it like going fishing. I know I haven't looked at it all. I know that even hardcore data, just straight numbers, can start to look different in different contexts as things change. And so, especially with qualitative research and verbatim feedback, that can start to look a lot different. Or I just give myself an opportunity to go fishing back into this data set to see what more I can learn.
Fair enough. Fair enough. What specifically, I guess, I've learned that you have recently, I believe just last year, or maybe it was the year before, but you moved into the role of chief evangelist. And prior to that, you were VP of marketing. On the surface, they seem similar to me, but obviously there's more than just a title difference.
Sure. Yeah. So when I joined the company, I've been with the software company BombBomb. We're based in Colorado Springs. I met the two co-founders about 10 or 12 years ago and started doing some project work with them and just really liked what they were up to. So I joined them full time about 8.5 years ago and was the only team member in marketing for several years. And then we brought on my friend Steve as CMO and we grew out the team. And through that window, I was titled VP of marketing and was, you know, in the process of handing off all these processes and systems that I had developed when I was the only person to do it. And I hit one of my anniversaries, work anniversaries. And I just got really excited about what we had done as a community, like with and for and through our customers. At the time, we maybe had 30 or 32,000 customers. And I was just really excited about it. And I felt like what we do is help you replace some of your plain typed out text with simple personal videos. So it's not about, for us, essentially, it's not about lights and scripts and editing and production and green screens and drones and all these other tools. Those are all great, but that's not really the spirit of what we're doing. We're saying that you're relying on plain typed out text that doesn't differentiate you and doesn't build rapport too often. And so we want to help people replace some of their plain typed out text with themselves, right? Their face, voice, personality, expertise, enthusiasm, sincerity, and all those other qualities that are difficult to capture in text. And so when you walk that out, you immediately start to think, well, almost anyone working in a professional capacity can benefit from this. And so what I thought would be a good thing to do was to take all of our best learning and teaching, the things that we have done in hundreds of blog posts and webinars and stage presentations and things, and put them all together into a book so that it would be a lightweight, tangible package where someone could get kind of the whole what, why, who, when, and how. We call this relationships through video in order to draw contrast against marketing through video. And if we could put it into a book, just a mainstream nonfiction business book, that it might reach more people. And so I got some excitement and buy-in from the team. And so where I'm going here is how I landed in this chief evangelist position. So I just started writing this book. And at a certain point when the company said like, okay, yeah, we'll get behind this book. It'll be a bomb project, not an Ethan project. I got about 70 or 80% of my time devoted to it for about 3 or 4 months. And I knew, and Steve, my supervisor, a CMO, and my co-author on the book, knew that whenever I came back, a couple things were going to be true. One, anything that I was doing before that was really important, someone else had picked up the slack on. Two, if I was doing something before and no one picked it up, it couldn't really be that important. So why pick it back up? And then three, I'm going to have this kind of space available to do a variety of other things that aren't being done that maybe we've always wanted to. And so coincidentally, at the same time, I ended up doing a guest turn on a really great podcast called Flip My Funnel. And I interviewed 4 chief evangelists just out of curiosity. I didn't really have a mind that this is something I wanted to do for myself. But I ended up talking with Sangram Vajray, who's a chief evangelist and co-founder at a software company called Terminus. Dan Steinman, who was a chief evangelist at Gainsight after building their entire customer success organization. I interviewed Dave Izbitsky, who I just reached out cold to on LinkedIn, and he was very receptive. He's the first employee in voice at Amazon, so he's the chief evangelist of Alexa and Echo. And because he was publishing a memoir at the time, I was able to get Guy Kawasaki, who is arguably the world's first chief evangelist at Apple and now at Canva. So I did these like 4 hours of interviews and learned a ton of stuff about it. And so when I started to unpack some of the lessons, Steve's eyes kind of lit up as mine did as well, and decided to kind of take some of what we learned from those guys and start to incorporate it. Now, I guess I'll button this up with this idea. All my time had been spent, I was learning how are people using video and email and video and social messaging and texting and practicing it myself. But it was really always around how can we generate more customers for BombBomb as a company and as a software. And what the theme of all these conversations was, is it's about the problem, not about the product. Ultimately, you want to raise up the entire category, the entire problem that you address. And the chief evangelist does this in a way that is essentially brand and company and product agnostic. It's really every day you're entrusting your most important and valuable messages to a form of communication that doesn't put your best self forward. If you matter and if relationships matter to your success, you should be thinking about simple personal videos. And so I'm not fully removed from operations and some of these other things I learned from these other chief evangelists, but the idea is, the world doesn't really know that this is a problem. We keep clicking send dozens, if not hundreds of times a day without even thinking about it. And so there is some evangelism to be done here. And I guess I'm uniquely qualified to do it.
Wow, that's cool. So evangelism in this sense isn't about the product. It's about the problem and making businesses more acutely. We have this problem. We just don't know, or we don't know that it can be solved somehow.
Correct. Yeah. And so I would challenge anyone that's listening, you know, whether you're working in a small organization or a large one, if you are actually innovating, and innovation can look a lot of different ways, but if you're innovating, then this basic structure is true. This is how things are. This is why it's problematic or not as good as it should be. And here is a way to solve that problem. And if you can't say that about your business, then you're probably not innovating, which is okay. You need some other strategy around it. For example, a pizza shop, they're probably not doing a dramatic amount of innovation unless they're, you know, most of them aren't.
Cheese-filled crust.
Right. Yeah. So periodically, I mean, the bigger ones have to figure something out because they're competing on all kinds of stuff. But if you're in a business and you're saying, hey, you have a problem, I have a solution, and this is a new solution, and this is a problem maybe you weren't thinking about, these are the kind of like the foundational underpinnings of you should be doing some form of evangelism. The other interesting thing is, I think this came from Dan Steinman in my interviews. He's like, if you are actually innovating, you are evangelizing. It's just a matter of whether or not you're doing it intentionally. And it doesn't have to just be one person. You know, we're 150 people or so. We have enough people on the team that we could maybe devote someone to do this most of the time, which is my situation. When we were much smaller, we split it really. Steve and I both certainly took a bit of an evangelism role, even though we weren't intentional about it. Our co-founders take a little bit of that role, but not necessarily in the traditional sense of like getting out there and doing press and some of these other things that it might start to look like as you imagine, what would this look like for my organization? So there are a lot of ways to do it, but if you're actually innovating, you should be evangelizing and you may already be doing it even if you don't know you're doing it.
I love it. So two things really caught my attention about BombBomb and that I found fascinating. One is the fact that like 5.5 years ago when I started this podcast, nobody knew who I was. And so the first 20 people that I wanted to interview really, really badly, I actually made them short little videos, like 2-minute videos. I had to put them onto YouTube, try and get it into Gmail. And it was such a pain in the ass, but it worked really, really, really well in that sense. And so that was like, wow, you've solved that problem. And I know how well it works. And I haven't done it since then. So I need to start. And the next was the fact that a company, a software company that makes, it's a huge problem you're solving, but in such a small, perfectly tiny, concise way. And now you have 150 employees and 50,000 customers. That's amazing. Yeah,
that's been a really, really interesting journey. We maybe had 200 or 300 when I started. And so obviously what my days and weeks look like today are dramatically different than 3 years ago. And then 3 years before that, and then 3 years before that, when I was doing part-time project work with these guys. The other thing I'll say is congratulations on being a pioneer. I love it. And people wonder, like, can't I just do this myself? And I say, yeah, you can. But as you already observed, John, like it's kind of a drag and it is too cumbersome. You have to have either a really large audience or a really high value in order to do it. And so what I'll offer here is a data point. About 1,000 of our customers have each sent 1,000 or more videos. Wow. Several of them have sent 5, 10. We have one guy that's at 15,000 videos. I'm at 10,000 videos myself. And what I say about the 1,000 videos is two things. You don't send 1,000 videos if the 999 before it didn't make a difference, you know, like,
and then the fourth one, if the third one didn't work,
but. Right. And you don't send your 1,000th video if it's not fast and easy to do. And so if you have to record it somewhere and then upload it somewhere else and mark it to private, because it's not for your YouTube channel, it's for this one person or these
three
people.
And then you get an email because it's like, they don't have access to it because it was marked the wrong one.
Right.
And so I got those emails. I was like,
So we want to make it just like light, easy, effective. You can do like nice buttoned up formal stuff. We have a drag and drop email maker where you can do like a really nice client appreciation party invite or a holiday greeting or whatever you want to do. I mean, we have all kinds of tools there, but the whole goal is whether it's in Gmail, some versions of Outlook, from Salesforce, Outreach, Zendesk, our mobile apps, our main web app. Make it quick and easy to say, oh, you know what? This would be better if I communicated it face-to-face. And to be able to do that. And then, of course, to know who's opening up the emails and watching the videos and clicking on links and all that too. So we have the analytics to help you follow up more effectively as well.
So from starting with 200 to 300 customers to nearly 50,000, as you said, like things have drastically changed. You're a much bigger team, much more sophisticated processes, I'm sure, in general. But what's something, Ethan, like through all these years of it and being part of this, like just exponential growth, what's something that you like missed from those earlier days of just like insane growth?
Oh man, I'm a little bit, I like control. I'm pretty particular. And so it was just a lot easier when the world, when the world was smaller and I could control all the things I needed and wanted to control. And so it's also been a huge growth experience for me to give away control and to move into more of a coaching and teaching and leadership and management role. And so, but for me, I get a lot of satisfaction from doing things, creating things, et cetera. And it's actually been a theme throughout my career. When I was in local television prior to that, I ran marketing inside like your local ABC station or Fox station or NBC station in a few different cities, including out here in Colorado Springs where I am now. And when I was in a much larger organization, I find myself in 20 or 25 hours of meetings a week, which was just brutal. But there was this wonderful art of writing, producing, and editing spots for television and cable that I really, really enjoyed. And so by coming to a smaller market like Colorado Springs, I was able to have both. I had a seat at the leadership table, but the team was so small that I had to keep some projects to myself. And so I could find that balance. And so for me, I feel like working with Steve and the rest of the team to find the right role for me, I feel like we've done a bit of that here with Chief Evangelism, where I am pioneering something new within the organization. I am leveraging all of my passion, my strengths, and my years and years of learning and teaching and practicing this, essentially relationships through video philosophy. And at the same time, still having some value and influence over newer team members to be able to train them up, coach them up, provide some context and backstory to make the work meaningful and to make sure no one is reinventing the wheel if they don't have to and all this other stuff. And so I do miss the intimacy of the small team. It still is extremely exciting. I mean, as big as we are now, it's still not nearly as, again, 50,000 people. Think about this. I kind of pontificate on this in the last chapter of the book. If there are tens of millions of people who should probably be recording a few videos a week in the context of the professional work that they do, which is to say nothing of all the personal communication. Tens of millions of people, but by my estimation, even though there are a lot more competitors in our space now than there were, say, 3 or 4 years ago, there have to be fewer than 500,000 practitioners of this consistently. So there's a long, long way to go. So I think I might look back on this day and remember it as the time when we were just 150 people and just 50,000 customers. But there is something very romantic about looking back and imagining how flexible we were and how big the world looked, and even the small wins felt really, really big. So, and there was less at stake. I mean, in a way, to get to 10,000 customers was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if we can ever get there. And then you get there, and so the world just keeps getting more challenging.
Right. And I mean, just different in almost every single way imaginable as well. I mean, it's pretty fascinating how technology, in its sense of just like the data we have on our phones and the speeds we have on our phones and how everybody just has phones everywhere now, the act of sending a video or getting one sent to you on the other end is just like, it's not cumbersome in any way. It's something we do all the time. We're just watching video all the time anyways. So it's pretty fascinating how like over the years, like your market has just like exploded for potential.
Well, it's really interesting. When the company was legally founded, the iPhone had not even been released. And if you remember back then, it wasn't until the second iteration of the iPhone that it even recorded video. So, and internet speeds, to your point, were terrible back then. A lot of folks were still on dial-up at home. And so this idea of, certainly for any of our B2C customers, the idea of sending videos into a home, not only might not you have good enough internet to live record or reasonably upload a video from your office, but if you're sending it into people's homes, they might not have the capacity to play it back without buffering and all that other stuff. And so the crazy thing is here, and then I'll give it back to you. The crazy thing is here, these HD cameras in our laptops and tablets and phones and the super high quality internet in our homes and in our offices have been available now for at least 5 years, and yet we're still so slow to move into this. And I think human vulnerability and this anxiety about being judged and accepting ourselves and the way we look and sound on camera is probably the impediment here, because to your point, the technological impediments are all gone.
That's true. That is very, very, very true. And I remember not allowing myself with those first videos to get hung up on it. I gave myself one shot. I was like, I'm doing one take. That's it. And it doesn't, like, whatever it comes out as, that's what. And that was the whole point to it. And that was actually why people liked it. And if you are listening out there and you hate the sound of your voice when it's recorded, just know that that's actually scientifically proven that we all do until we get used to hearing it enough times. So that's not just you and it's not just your voice, because I still think that about my voice. And I'm apparently a podcaster. So here we are. In this, Ethan, you talked about like this, the transformation in how you've had to grow personally. Well, you said professionally, but also the personal aspect of it. And like, you've become a completely different person from when you started. You just had to. You've had to adapt. You've had to grow. And you've had an amazing team around you pushing you as well. But have you like utilized, say, coaches, consultants, those kind of thing personally, even if it's within the business, but to allow yourself and to push yourself personally to grow as a human?
I have a couple informal mentors, people who really meant a lot to me when I was in an even more aggressive period of, who am I? What am I about? You know, what am I good at? What are my marketable skills? What do I want to be doing? When I was even younger. And so I still stay in contact with two people in particular I talk with very, very regularly and have now for well over 12, 15 years, but not formal coaching. I guess as a leadership team, we've always stuck with the Rockefeller Habits as a quarterly process. And you might see that now in a book called Scaling Up. And there's also, I forget how all this ties together, but Rockefeller Habits, Gazelles, which is designed for fast growth companies, and a book called Scaling Up by a guy named Vern Harnish. We followed that methodology for years. And so some of the folks that we've engaged to moderate some of our quarterly offsite meetings to where we, you know, where we throw out 10 to 20 years, throw it out 5 years, throw it out 3 years, throw it out a year, and then get really specific about what we want to accomplish within the year and then within the quarter. And we, by doing that every single quarter, you just miss opportunities nearly as much as, you know, laying out an annual plan in almost any business, unless it's a really, really old and highly predictable business, which really, which one is anymore? An annual plan is just kind of nonsense. So we do it quarterly. And so in that process, we've had some people engage with us in a bit of a kind of a coaching way in order to facilitate this process that Scaling Up advises. And so that's been helpful. Of course, we've done some of the tests together as groups, Enneagram, and we did the Berkman together, which is those are two that I like much better than, gosh, what are the more popular ones? Myers-Briggs, right. That kind of a thing. And so even that is really good for self-awareness, common language, evaluating, you know, what's true and what's not true, provoking conversations with your peers. Like very infrequently, do we look to our peers and our friends and our team members and say, be honest with me, right? Like, talk to me about me. Talk to me about the way I work. Talk to me about the way I talk. These kinds of things. Whereas if you have this objective kind of third party, in this case, test, like a Berkman or an Enneagram, it just gives you some common language and gives you this structure by which you can have these conversations that aren't super easy to have without that kind of activity around it.
That's cool. I like it. So it's, I mean, having or being part of a leadership team, doing those things together, and probably, I mean, just being able to like see other people growing as well. I'm sure you kind of just feed off of each other in that sense, that whole like rising waters and ships thing.
Yes, we're all going up. Everything's going up.
Exactly. And so, I mean, you have to, otherwise you would get left behind if everybody wasn't growing together as the company itself grows and your customer base grows and everything else grows. So with this book, you mentioned the book that you wrote it and how you wrote it or why you wrote it, and the fact that it now also sort of pushed you into this new role. But Rehumanize Your Business is the book. Is the book for people who use BombBomb, or is it for people who should use BombBomb?
It's really for anyone who wants to be more personal and human in the way that they're communicating in their business. So I wrote it first person, Steve stories. I just to make the writing consistent. Anyone who's like, hey, here's a great story for this spot, or don't forget about this story. And he's like in the story with maybe one of our customers or something. I would just refer to my co-author, Steve. So I ended up writing the whole thing first person. It is from our experience. Steve was a 2 or 3 year customer before joining the company as our CMO. And so BombBomb is a character in the book, but it is not a book about BombBomb. It's about how to be more personal and more human more often. The consequences of relying exclusively on plain typed out text, the value of relationships, which I think people understand intuitively, but if you pick up the book, which is not that difficult to read, I don't think, the beginning of it is like, what is this movement? Because again, not everyone even recognizes this is an opportunity or a problem. Why does this matter? So we spend a couple chapters on the, from a research standpoint, the inherent problems with text-based communication. And I think a lot of folks will find that really interesting and like nod their head. And as soon as you realize that it's research validated, you'll be like, oh yeah, that makes sense. I should have known that all along or been cognizant of it. And then how does video replicate the in-person? Obviously the ideal situation, John, is that you and I are sitting together in a room, maybe across a coffee table, having this conversation and in person, but obviously we can't, it's not scalable. It doesn't make sense for this situation. So we're doing it by Zoom, which is fantastic. And so how does video, what aspects of video are replicated in that? What aspects of an in-person meeting are replicated through video? And then how do we achieve that? So we get a little bit into who's actually doing this. When would you reach out and send a video instead of text? For you, you're talking about essentially cold prospecting, having someone who doesn't know you feel like they know you and feel compelled to engage with you on the opportunity that you're presenting, right?
Right.
And so that's a great use case. And we do address that use case in the book. We address many other use cases as well. We talk about how to actually do this, some tips on basic camera stuff. We don't get deeply technical. There's a little bit there. But, you know, some people let the equipment be their reason they don't get started. They either think, you know, gosh, I need to do some shopping for a new camera before I can get started, which is just a missed opportunity. You have everything you need to get started today. So we do address the very basic stuff that you have with you and some basic considerations, and then give you some ideas if you do want to upgrade. And then we have some advanced strategies in there as well, like how to get more emails opened, how to get more videos played, how to get more replies or responses or clicks, whatever the purpose of the email or video email is. And then some advanced strategies like for follow-up. So what do you do if you send a video email to 582 people? What do you do with 137 people who opened it but have not played your video? How might you follow up with those folks? Same thing. What if you send a video email to one person and they open the email, they play the video, but they've never replied or responded? How do you follow up on that opportunity? So we go through some of that stuff as well. So it really walks you from this is something that you can and should be doing. Here's why you can and should be doing it. Here's some other people who are doing it. Here's when you might do it. And here's some considerations on how to do it and how to do it better. So you can, if you're using another service there, you know, we're one of now, as I said, there are a number of competitors have come into the space that, again, I sincerely feel like our community has pioneered now for a decade. If you're using another service, you can get value out of this book that you can apply in a variety of situations.
And how many videos have you now recorded?
I've done about 10,000 myself.
Wow. So you are what they would refer to, I guess, as an expert now?
I think so.
Take you an hour each one, but
yeah. And here's the funny thing. It's been slow and steady. I mean, out of the gate, of course, I did all of the customer communication. So this was like newsletters and all the onboarding email sequences and those kinds of things. And I'd get replies with questions. And sometimes I would forward a question to the sales team or forward a question to the support team. But I knew I really, especially early on, really needed to understand our initial customers. Who are they? How did they find us? What value are they actually getting? I mean, that's the ultimate question. What problem am I solving for my customer, for this type of customer in particular? And how many different types of customers do I have? And what is the range of those problems I solve or opportunities I help them capitalize on? And so I always took care, and I would make this recommendation to anyone, no matter where you are in your organization, more customer contact is better than less. And what you think you know because you learned it last year might not be true today, or it might be more nuanced, or it might be more true than ever. But without that customer contact, you're not going to know. So again, when I would get replies to some of this communication that was coming from me, it had to come from someone. You know, I'd forward some that someone else was better prepared or could answer more quickly, but I would take a lot of that directly. And so by sending videos back and forth with hundreds and hundreds of our customers, I got to feel like I knew them. And in some cases, it would actually come to life and I would meet them out at a trade show or a conference and we would greet each other like longtime friends, which is just a really wonderful feeling. Again, this relationship orientation makes our work so much more satisfying, but it also got me very comfortable recording and sending videos. And then when we added video inside the Gmail inbox in particular, because bombbomb.com is a Google Apps domain, we all use Google Apps and Gmail is our email inbox. When we put the tools right inside every composer reply window, I mean, that's when it just went crazy, because then you really have to ask yourself every time you're clicking send, like, should I just communicate this in order to save time or be more clear or get the tone or emotion right? Like, and it's right there in your inbox. Like, it just changed everything for me. And that's when I went from sending 100 videos a month to sometimes 100 videos a week. That'd be an aggressive one. That'd be if I wanted to do something in particular, like reach out to all people who fit this particular criteria over the course of a week. But it really made it a lot easier and more common in my day-to-day practice. And the key is making it a habit.
Yeah, totally. There's very few things I let into my Gmail because it can be just inundating. And if you have these buttons and things there that are offered to you to always use because you've installed it, but you never use it, that's just, to me, I don't like it because I spend a lot of time in my Gmail. So that's, to me, that's amazing that you guys have that, because again, when I did it, I literally, you couldn't even add the video. You had to put a link and it sort of went in the bottom as an attachment or something. It was weird. So it was different. But BombBomb is at bombbomb.com. But the book, I think you can get anywhere you buy books online, probably and off, right, Ethan?
Yep, absolutely. Mostly on. It's really interesting. So much of the physical retail space is pay to play. And even though we've sold more than 20,000 copies, it's not Michelle Obama's book, for example. You know, we're not competing for that shelf space. So you can definitely get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, if you want bulk purchasing. The folks at Porchlight, of any book, by the way, especially nonfiction business books, the folks at Porchlight up in Milwaukee are awesome. They ran a lot of our pre-order opportunities. We ran through them, and they're just a really great partner. So to your point, most people get it on Amazon. And right now, just today, as we're recording this, it moves all the time. But right now, it's 44% off cover price for the hardcover. And of course, there's also an audiobook that Steve and I were privileged enough to voice ourselves. It was really fun.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So I will find links to the book on Amazon. I'll find links to that audiobook, as well as bombbomb.com and bombbomb.com/book if you want to just check out the book and learn some more first. I will put those into the show notes, as well as a whole bunch of other stuff that we talked about, including your podcast and the Scaling Up book we talked about, as well as Isagai Kawasaki. He was one of my first, I believe, like 40 or 50 guests on the show years and years and years ago. So I'll dig that one out of the archives for people. Awesome. As well. Yeah, it was good. But Ethan, thank you so much for stopping by, especially on short notice. Nobody out there knows that, but they do now. I really do appreciate it. And I appreciate you sharing so openly with us. Just keep doing what you do.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the positive feedback. I appreciate the opportunity so much. And I really enjoyed, obviously, you know, some of your early questions, there are things I hadn't thought a lot about. It's so easy to get into a podcast conversation, especially when you're supporting a book and it's just, you get the same questions over and over. And I found this very refreshing and fun.
Awesome. Thanks. All right. That was a lot of fun. I hope it was for you too. I hope it was the distraction you needed or the interest, or you learned something or gained some sort of insight into it. But we are living in strange times, as you know. But we are continuing on, and even working with clients across so many different markets. I have 6 clients right now across completely different markets. And just to see the impact and the changes happening in all these different markets it's fascinating in a way. It's also unnerving in some ways, but we will get through it. And I think we'll learn a lot sort of as we go. And yeah, I'll keep bringing these to you. And I hope you keep showing up and enjoying them. My email is open, John, J-O-N, at hacktheentrepreneur.com. at any time. If you would like something, if you just have to vent, or if you just want to say hi, I'd be happy to have a quick conversation with you. Hacktheentrepreneur.com is the site. You can head over there. I'll have show notes for Ethan. Plus, we are still publishing new articles over there to help you and your business through these tumultuous times. All right. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you once again for stopping by. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.